You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, we are back from a hiatus as I had a big fundraiser this weekend and Adam was traveling, but we are both back here. As always, I am Tony East with the West Indianapolis Community News, and Adam from Indy Cornrows, my co-host Adam Breeden, is on the other line. Adam, how was Miami?
It was nice. Hot as always in Florida this time of year. Trying to think of anything cool. I mean, I just kind of hung out there for the weekend. It was kind of nice.
I've never been there. I'm jealous.
Yeah, I mean, I figured I'm 2 hours from there. Figured I'd go spend a weekend out there. Why not? It was kind of fun. It's a fun city. Nice little beach town.
So the Pacers are done with Summer League. We were going to do the last game as an episode, but then Leaf and Aaron Holiday didn't play because they were injured. I did air quotes. But they just held guys out because it's a meaningless Summer League game. They beat the Nets by like 40. That was it. There's really nothing to talk about. But one guy who did play well in that game and forced segue here, Elise Johnston, did a great job. And today he just earned his NBA deal, which somehow 2.5 hours later, we still don't know the details. So sorry, we can't really dissect it. But I'm glad he's on the NBA roster.
Don't we count on the details? Like, isn't it? Aren't they?
The first year's fully guaranteed.
Oh, you mean guarantee wise? I mean, like, aren't they cap strong where they can offer him a 2-year deal, basically? Well,
yeah, it's a 1 or 2 year deal, and it's a minimum deal. We know a lot of it, but we don't know what the guarantee. Yeah, stuff that only I care about.
No. I mean, it's important. I'm saying like the general structure. We know it's 2 years, which is kind of important.
We know
it's probably similar to EK's deal.
The first year's, probably. Yeah, I agree. I bet it is. Which, oh my gosh. EK's deal fully guaranteed yesterday, so he's on the team for sure too.
Yeah, we got a question about that, so we can talk about that later.
And the other thing, which is super minor, Elijah Stewart from USC, kind of a 3-and-D guy, 4-year starter for them. He got an Exhibit 10 deal with the Pacers, which just means it's basically a non-guaranteed 1-year minimum deal that the team can convert to a 2-way at no charge to them. And then they can convert it back to an NBA deal if they want, or they can waive him at no cost. So basically, he got a training camp invite, but it's a really team-friendly deal. So there's the first training camp invite of many. But Adam, it's mailbag time, isn't it?
Yes. It was Stewart, just real quick, it seemed like that was what they planned to do from the start when they signed him. It was basically for a G League spot, probably 2-way contract, would be my guess.
I would also think that there's 15 days left this month, and then – so after 60 days, he starts getting bonuses. So that would be mid-September, middle of training camp, basically. So we'll see how that ends up rolling out for him. That'll be interesting. I think a lot of those Exhibit 10s will get signed in closer to the end of the month for most teams.
Let's get to the mailbag.
Yes, let's just start the fun part. So we're gonna do Nick first because he beat you guys by about a week on his questions, and he had 3, so he gets first priority by a lot. He is at NDP_sports. His first question is there any chance the Pacers can make a trade for Kevin Love? We've talked about this before, but Adam, I'm going to go with now that the roster's filled out, the chance is pretty close to zero.
Yeah, it might be a February deal. It's the only thing I can see.
That makes a lot.
Right now, it's probably not happening. The time passed for Cleveland to tank all out, but they could, you know, to trade everything and go to complete full tank mode, but they could trade him in February because he's got, like you said, he has an opt-out date at the end of the year. It's probably 50-50 right now, whether he takes it or not, just because it's a lot, like $25 million, but he's still relatively young, could probably get back in the market, get a 2 or 3 year deal at maybe 50 or 60, depending on how he plays. So
I think the best chance it happens is the Pacers are like first or second in the East in February and the Cavs are like 12th.
Yeah.
I mean, get assets and tank.
I would say even if the Cavs are sitting somewhere like the 8th or 10th best team or worst team in the league, but just far enough out where they can't make the playoffs, but they could end up – because their pick is top 10.
10 to 10. Yeah, that's a good point.
They want to end up under that top 10 if they're not going to make the playoffs. I mean, I think Gilbert, the owner there, has some – he's going to make the playoffs without LeBron, show post-LeBron, whatever. And maybe Kevin Love is actually really good because he hasn't really had a chance to kind of be on his own team since he left Minnesota. But – most likely they'll be at the 7-8, if not worse, range in the East, and that's probably when they'll start dumping him because he probably opt out and they want to get as much back they can from as possible.
I agree, but that's we'll circle back to that question at a later date, but that's a good starting point. The second question he had was, should the Pacers be in the conversation for best team in the East? I'm personally Celtics are the best, and it's not really a conversation, but I'm up for debate if you think otherwise.
I think the Celtics are some question marks. I mean, I think every team in the East that thinks are the best teams are probably six, right? Bucks, Wizards, Pacers, Raptors, Sixers, and Boston all think they could be the best team in the East next year, probably. And I think all of them have so many different question marks that, you know, the Pacers aren't the favorite to be the best team, but they certainly could be in one of the scenarios where some injuries don't pan out, signings don't pan out or pan out positive another way, you know, there's that.
Yeah. I think there's a chance to end up with the number one seed, but I don't think they're the best team in the East, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, they're not. They don't really have a second best player. You know, most of the top, like both Philly and Boston have a top two, if not top three, who are really solid. You know, even the Wizards have a top two and the Raptors have a top two, but they are this year going to be deeper than they were last year. So there's a chance. I mean, I don't know how much I would bet on them being the number one seed, the best team in the East, but I would bet on them being probably a top three or four seed easily.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. I think they're on the top tier of the East. That's
yeah, and they're probably the team that is, you know, a Kyrie injury or a Hayward again injury from competing for the Eastern Conference Championship.
I agree. His third and final question was, do you think Miles Turner could be the most improved player next season? Why or why not? I think that depends on how much they alter his role from last season. If it's the same, no chance he wins most improved player. If they change it and give him a few more touches, then maybe, yeah.
That's exactly what I wrote too. Where I had thinking that if he gets nine shots a game again, it's not going to matter. He cannot win most improved player. He won't score enough points.
No matter how good his defense becomes, he'll never win most improved if they don't give him more touches.
Yeah. So where does those shots come from, you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. But I have a stat here for you.
I'm ready.
I forget who tweeted this. It's someone I like, but it's Miles Turner attempted 12 or more shots 21 times last season. And in those games, he averaged 19 points per game on 47% shooting from deep and 52% overall. So clearly he does very well when he's involved in the offense.
Yeah, I think the obvious answer is the shots come from Thad. If you look at
I think so too.
If you look at a stat sheet of all the Pacers' field goal attempts, I mean, the glaring ones of too many shots taken, and really Thad is not too many shots. It's maybe just the way the offense is set up, the way he's the leader of the team shoots a lot, is Thad and Lance. You kind of assume Lance's shots will all go to Tyreke Evans, ultimately, maybe a little bit split between him and McDermott. That's kind of you assume. So then really the only place for people to shots to drop down is the 10 that's a bonus average, or the 10 that Thad Young averaged and the 10 that Bojan averaged. Get those to like 8, so those guys at 8. Then maybe you can add 4 shots to Turner, get them to 14, which is about where you were talking about.
Yep, I'm with you there. Again, getting most improved too. Like, more of them will have to fall. But like I just said, I think he's more in rhythm when more shots come. So I think it's possible, but I don't know if that I would say it. I expect that role change. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think most improved player has to average like 25 points usually.
Yeah. I mean, that's if you guy who just blows up in scoring, you know, McCollum, Giannis, Vic.
Yeah, I mean, unless Turner becomes like defensive player of the year level, which, but I don't know if that's enough of a gaudy stat where people would vote most improved player.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that.
And Oladipo,
if I had to pick a clubhouse leader in my head right now for next year, I'd pick D'Angelo Russell.
Okay, that's a good one because he'll probably score a ton.
Now that Jeremy Lin's gone, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know. You just, most players you don't know until you see the first couple months of the season. Because you don't know who's going to make the jump.
You're right.
You just don't. You can guess, but I mean, nobody would have guessed Oladipo would make the jump he made. Right. I guess some people were kind of guessing it, but.
That's true. That is true.
As long as Oladipo's on the roster, though, he's taking 18 to 20 shots a game, and that's going to not allow Turner to get to the 20-point mark, probably.
I agree. But let's move on to the next question. And another person for the first time of the show, Blaine Beats at Blaine, B-L-A-N-E 44, says, is there a high ceiling for Elise Johnson after his summer league play? Okay, so my answer to that, not Elise-related, but, I mean, Joe Young was amazing in summer league 1 year, like, it's really hard to extrapolate summer league play into a good player. You have to see it on an NBA court. So obviously there's a better chance because he was good in summer league, but we don't know a ton about him yet.
Yeah. We got like 5 of these, I think, about Elise. Summer league, it does not matter in relative to an NBA career. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
There's no correlation.
It matters in that. You know, the skills you show in summer league are the skills you're going to show in the NBA, but how good you are at them, you get nothing from summer league on knowing that.
It's an exhibition games for players who either try really hard or are super talented to show off. That's sort of the two levels you get.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, I mean, it's like the test where if you fail it, it's bad, but there's no passing the test.
I will say this. I like Elise. I think he'll be He won MVP at Adidas Nations. I did not know that. That's incredibly impressive. So he's like apparently good and compared to players at his age. So I think he will be way better than his draft position, but I don't know how good of an NBA player he'll be.
Yeah. You don't know about injuries too. He's older than most guys. You just don't know. I mean, I think
he's older than Miles Turner, isn't he?
Is he? He's 22.
I think he's older than Miles Turner.
Okay. So Turner turned 21 just this year. So does Sabonis. They both were born in the same year.
Miles Turner
Miles Turner just turned 22. Sorry, both of them.
Miles Turner, okay, they're a month apart. Elise is 28 days younger than Miles Turner. So that's how old Elise is.
Yeah, but a common comparison, which I don't like, is to Draymond Green, who was also played 4 years of college. He was 22 when he came in the league too. So, I don't know if that age matters. I think it helps. He's probably more developed than most of the young players. So he looks bigger out there on the court, especially in summer league. But – we'll just see. Let's see how he develops. How much playing time he gets, how much time he spends in the G League. You don't know. He's an undersized power forward, so it's kind of a hard bet.
It is. All right. Our next question is not basketball related, but it's fun. It's from Carpool Lane. Is his name on Twitter at Lane KUNCE? I don't know how to pronounce either of those. It is, if every Pacers player was locked into a solo battle royale scenario against each other, who would win and why? And I don't know, but I'm going to pick Thad Young because he's good at everything and probably, as a result, is good at survival skills.
Yeah, that's a good one. I want to lean towards Sabonis.
I would have 100% picked Lance if you asked me last year.
Well, yeah, no, that's a complete given. just because Lance could do anything. I want to lean towards Sabonis. I don't know why. I just kind of do. I think I'm thinking of who's got the shorter guys are not going to be as equipped to the bigger guys. So that's a good one because he's got the combination of being agile and big at the same time. That's kind of what you need. I think Turner's a little too thin kind of. So I don't know. I guess that's a good choice for that, I guess.
I think that's the answer right now. But who knows? Maybe it'd be Elise. The dude's got the physical tools.
Yeah, who down the bench? There's not really anything I can think of.
The next question is from Keegan Fisher at kfisher0924. One serious question, one not. The serious one is, has your opinion on Aaron Holiday changed at all after summer league? Like all my Elise answer or from earlier, no, because it's hard to say anything from summer league. I will say he's really quick with the ball. I did not know he was that fast with the ball, but he kind of showed exactly what I thought he would show in summer league. So no, my opinion of him has not really changed.
Yeah, I was high on Aaron Holiday. I'm still high on Aaron Holiday.
Low on Holiday and I'm still low on Holiday.
Yeah, but I think he showed some flashes of that he can really shoot. He'll be a really good three-point shooter, and it's whether he can get the defense to go with it to ultimately become a quality even backup point guard.
You got to hope for that shot to be a real thing in the NBA. That's his best chance.
It's really good. That thing comes up. That's a fast shot.
It's fast. That is true. It's super fast. Jaren Jackson is scary fast for a guy who's 6'11".
And Holiday's got long enough arms where it's not going to get blocked like crazy.
Yeah, that being 6'7 wingspan does help him quite a bit because I am taller than him, and that is not good. Part two.
It's not a good time for an NBA player.
Part two of this question is a hot dog a sandwich?
I don't know. This is a question that's perplexed.
I say no.
Many men smarter than me, so I don't want to answer it.
I say no. My distinction for sandwich is the pieces of bread surrounding the contents of the bread are discontinuous. So a burrito and a hot dog and things like that is just one piece of bread. It is not a sandwich, but two slices of bread. So hence a burger being a sandwich makes it a sandwich.
That's very in-depth, and that's a lot more thought than I would have given this question. I don't know. A hot dog is a hot dog.
I agree. Fine.
I don't care. I like both. I like hot dogs. I like sandwiches. It doesn't matter. I'll eat them both. And because you eat a hot dog kind of at a different way than you eat a sandwich, or you eat a hot dog sort of I don't know how to put it, north to south versus you eat a sandwich downwards. I don't know how to put it.
I know what you're saying. That's funny.
You know what I mean? You eat a hot dog sort of at a different way than you eat a sandwich. Just because you don't bite into the hot dog fully, you bite pieces off the hot dog.
Yeah, I like that. Mitchell Nash, excuse me, sorry, Mitchell, at Mitchell Nash 92 says, can Alize fit in the rotation at the power forward spot? Assuming we think he's shown more than Leaf and the general reluctance to play a double big lineup, like Okwin and Sabonis. So I do not think he will play over Leaf ever this year. Unless Leaf is just super bad, which would be awful. But I think he'll probably mostly get garbage time minutes, if I had to guess. Like, I picture he plays about as much as EK did last year in the pros, which is like 30 to 50 minutes. So probably not a ton. Probably most of his time will come in Fort Wayne, but that is just a guess.
Yeah, barring some major injury, he's not going to play very much.
I agree. I think Leaf would have to retire for Alize to play more than him this year. I don't think there's a way that happens. They're going to try to force the heck out of Leaf developing, if you ask me. So I do not think he fits in the rotation this year.
So. Yeah, I don't think so either. I'm surprised they honestly didn't give him a two-way deal. I guess not super surprising, but I thought he'd get a two-way deal. So
they always they love their second-rounders, though, Pacers do.
Yeah, I wonder if that's almost a sense of, like, you have to prove to your owner that you made a good pick.
Don't want to give up on that. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, we just drafted this guy, but we wasted a pick, and we're just going to put him in the G League for half or for a two-way deal, not give him a real contract kind of thing. I don't know how you sell that to your owner.
Speaking of EK, our next question is about him. From Pacers All Day, which is at Nick Stidham 31, who was way ahead on the Alize Johnson curve and was telling me all the draft process he's going to be good, so... I'm starting to believe in this dude. He said, is EK going to come out with a jumper and give us a four, or is he just going to be a five and always a five? I don't think he'll ever have a jumper. I don't think that's something in his repertoire. You know, his pre-draft profile was basically this dude's a freak athlete who could become, you know, the best defensive center on your team one day. And I think that's what he's looking like he's going to lean towards. I don't think I've ever seen him shoot a jumper when I've been at practice or anything. So I do not think he will have a jumper.
No. Yeah, I mean, I don't really know how he's going to translate right on the NBA. He's been so hurt, and we haven't really seen him that much. I'm pretty low on him right now. I'm not sure he's on the roster in a year from now.
I would like him to learn before jump shooting.
Yeah, I mean, what are the chances you think he gets cut, like, mid-season or before the season in sense for an extra roster spot?
I doubt it. Okay. I really doubt it. They have a roster spot now. I just doubt it. It would take some injuries, and they need to sign someone for them to cut him, I think.
Okay, so my thought was they'd bring in a guy, sign him the 15th spot, and then EK would be the first one out if needed to be.
I think after the full guarantee date for the season, I bet he's the first guy to go.
Yeah, he just has been too hurt, and I mean, for me to really have any like strong opinion about him right now, I haven't really seen enough of him play in the NBA.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. He had some good G League performances. He averaged like 2 blocks a game in under 30 minutes. Like, he's pretty good at protecting the paint, but he's got to learn a lot of offense and passing and stuff first.
The Pacers have a kind of a glut of centers, it feels like. I mean, they got two
there's no
guarding caliber centers.
There's no route for him to play. He only played 30 minutes last year. So
yeah, I mean, the only route he plays is if one of the two gets traded.
Yep, I agree. James at IP Basketball says, what has to happen next season for the year to be considered a success? I think they make it to the conference semifinals or conference finals. Would be
nice. Yeah, I think a top 4 seed in a playoff series win.
Yep, I'm with you there. Crawl, walk, run in order. They crawled last year. They almost won a playoff series. This year they're walking. They're going to win a playoff series, possibly two. Then after 2019 free agency, hopefully they're running. So next summer, ask me that again, and I will say exactly what I just said.
The one disappointing thing is that since they went to 7 this year, there's no way to improve in the first round. So they've gotten swept in the first round.
Yeah.
If they got swept this year, it would be like, oh, well, if they're in a 7-game series competitive against a good team, that's good enough. But now it's not because you took LeBron in 7 games last year. So you got to win a first round series. They have done it in, what, 5 years now? So I thought.
I think they can do it, though. I think they really can. So.
Yeah, they can get home court and even get a top 3 seed, I think, for sure. They can win a first round series. They're the 4. I don't know. We'll see.
So this question might have a longer answer, and we might have to cut down some of the options, but it is from Jay Jones at Infinity031. He says, what does every player under 25 have to do this season for you to be happy with their development? I propose we limit this to Turner, Sabonis, Holiday, and TJ Leaf.
I was going to say, let's just cut Leaf and Elise out with one comment. Just say, learn this season, sit in the bench, learn from the guys, and get stronger, right?
TJ Leaf needs to prove that he can be a net neutral at his peak. Because if he can't even be a peak net neutral this year, he's never going to make it. He has a lot to learn. I agree with you. That's a good answer for those two guys.
Yeah, Leaf, stronger, more consistency, I guess, or some kind of like doesn't feel like he's behind the play all the time.
I agree.
Something where he looks like a real NBA player for maybe 5 solid minutes in a game. One time.
For me, for Aaron Holiday, I don't think he'll play a ton. But it's showing like Leaf did last year. You know, Leaf showed he can hit the three, even though he can't do much else yet. That's at least somewhat encouraging. You know, same for Holiday for me. If he can shoot the three, he'll have some sort of future. So that would be what I would like to see from him.
Yeah, Holiday, just sit back and learn from the two pretty veteran point guards in front of you.
Yeah, sit next to Corey Joseph at practice every day and learn how to play D like him.
Yeah, learn how to read the four at Collison. Just get reps in. He'll probably spend a lot of time practicing with like Oladipo and let Oladipo just burn you and learn how to, you know, stuff like that. Just get a lot of experience in, because this is the kind of a redshirt year for him, because there's no – they've got two, again, starting caliber point guards on the roster who can kind of help – he won't need to, like, play any backup minutes. If somebody's hurt, he might have to play, but maybe even not that much, because they can probably stagger it. Somebody with Evans too. So just learn and then be ready in year two to come out and show something.
I agree. For Turner and Sabonis.
All right, so this is the big ones.
I think the first thing I'll say is since I said their names together, is can they play together is a big part of their development this year.
Yeah, so I'm writing a piece for Nick Cornrows on the lineup, a Sabonis-Turner lineup, part of the lineup series I've been doing. But I think for both of them, one thing we can start here is they both – either one of them or both of them need to learn how to defend in space on the perimeter.
Absolutely.
They got torched in the playoffs, both guys on the playoffs. The LeBron James switching on to – every time LeBron looked for a switch on either Sabonis or on Turner. I will give Sabonis some credit that he did show flashes where he could actually guard LeBron straight up, at least prevent him getting the lane, forcing LeBron to jump shots. I mean, LeBron's LeBron, and LeBron hit some incredible jump shots the entire series. But Turner sometimes just cannot handle perimeter players. I mean, he just doesn't get close enough. He kind of looks shaky out there, and especially if he gets so far from the rim – he's really just not good on defense then, because his whole thing is being around the rim, forcing guys to make bad shots around the rim and blocking shots.
I would specifically say I want Sabonis to be the guy defending on the perimeter of the two, just because Turner's rim protection is so good already that you'd like to continue to have that asset and be able to use it at all times. So Sabonis, yes, any semblance of defending in space, even if it's not all the way to the three-point line this year, like if it's just out to the mid-range, that's enough for me to be happy that he could get there eventually. So I'm with you on that. I think defending in space is a crucial skill for both, but particularly Sabonis in my eyes.
Yeah, and then I think on the offensive end, it's pretty turnovers, obvious, right?
Fouls for Sabonis are my other two things.
What were they? Sorry.
Less turnovers, less fouls. I mean, he threw it away a lot. He was the highest foul rate on the team. And that's just young center stuff, so I think it'll come around, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think with Turner, it's also post-play, and Sabonis is three-point shot.
Yes. Well, Sabonis didn't take a lot of threes last year, which I liked. Well, but I agree with
that's the point.
Turner, it's also not just scoring in the post, but also creating out of the post, because you know that's what made Sabonis like as playable as him at times, is that he could create through the post, which Turner had none of.
Yeah, I mean, there was one playoff game where Sabonis probably got torched on D a bunch, but he was playable because of being able to pass out of the post and because he literally was just scoring everything in the post. I mean, he went 6 for 8. He was hitting floaters. Like, I mean, he hit every shot. I felt like was inside 7 feet, especially on the Oladipo double team. So that's where he sort of became playable in a sense, because he's not a great defender, but he was been so good on the opposite end of times that it's like you have to leave him in the game because he just doesn't miss.
Yep, so I agree.
Plus, I think if they play together, Sabonis probably plays center on the offensive end.
And power forward on D.
Yeah, that's probably how it works.
I'm with you. So there are some key things for development there, but I think a lot of them already have enough, or with Sabonis and Turner, they both have enough discernible skills that if I just see improvement on what they can already do, I'll be happy enough.
Yeah, I just wonder how to stagger them, because both can be starting centers in the league, and Turner has enough of a three-point shot where you could just throw him in the corner and make him just a three-point shooter for a little while. I don't know how much he wants to do that, it's just kind of a tough situation to handle, but ultimately I think it's you have to pick one and trade the other one for a perimeter player.
Eventually, maybe, but not yet.
But if you develop both into really quality centers, which you could do over this year, they just increase their trade value, basically.
Yep. All right, next question. Oh, EK was an under 25 player, and he's in the next question. He's proving he can play offense in the NBA. Caleb Hill at PacerFan334 says, is EK actually worth guaranteeing on the roster? Haven't seen him play whatsoever, and he just missed second summer league because of injury. We already kind of touched on it. I guess his potential is kind of high enough to keep around. I don't think his NBA career will last much longer.
Yeah, we touched on this already. I already said it. Maybe he might. I think he might be a guy who's cut midseason if they need a roster spot.
This is a fun one. I like that it's this next question is specific to a number. Tanner Parsons at TPAR 30 says, how many wins do you think the Pacers added this offseason?
So this is, I saw this question and I've been thinking on it. And honestly, I think they added zero.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to that too. My number is two, but I don't think the answer is as high as people think either.
Yeah, I had 0-2 range because if you look at the expected win loss, they were probably about 45 and they got to 48. They really
great in the clutch, which is, you can be consistent at that, but you know, a lot of, it seems like a lot of statistical research says it's pretty random from year to year.
Yeah, and they really just exceeded expectations in a lot of games. I mean, there were a lot of games where they should have lost and they won. I would not say they were like completely injury free because Oladipo missed 7 games, Collison 11, Turner 11, but they didn't seem to have like this debilitating injury except for the 5-game stretch that Oladipo missed where they were just terrible. But what they did is they got better on the margins where 48 should be expected, where like last year 48 was like way above it. Now 48 is like the expected number because they got better on their bench. They just, the team is deeper and they should be able to kind of sustain some minor injuries again to a better rate because they don't have Steve's on the team.
I agree. I say 50 wins. If they have the same level of health as last year, if you could guarantee me that, I'd say like 54. But I think 50 to 48 range is reasonable. So 0-2 is what I settled on as well.
Yeah, I think 48-50 again is a top 3-4 seed probably, yep. Same range. I mean, it will also come down to how close the playoff race is in the last week or two, whether they kind of start resting and whatnot. I mean, because they could have got to 49, right? They should have got to 49. They rest that last game.
Like, yeah, that Hornets game when GR3 started, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it just depends. I mean, I think 50 is about the number for the two or the three seed, maybe the two. It depends how Boston or kind of comes out in Philadelphia.
Oh, no. That's not top two. No chance.
50? But I don't know. I mean,
Boston are going to win 50 over 55.
Yeah, but what if, you know, Embiid misses 25 games? I mean, then they're back to 50.
He missed 25 games his last year.
Didn't he play 66 last year?
No, I don't know. I thought he played like 61.
I thought he played 66.
63. Man. All right, 19.
Okay, we split the difference right down the middle.
He missed 19 and they won 50. Like, I think they can win 55 either way.
I guess. Maybe you're right.
And Boston, too. I think the 3-4 range is going to be where we're talking, though.
Okay. I think because you don't know how Toronto comes out, too. Toronto could come out firing again. But
the two best players are just aging, you know. Like, if their youth could totally prop them up and make them really good again. But, you know, if DeMar or Kyle Lowry take a step back, then they're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, but what if DeMar flip for Kawhi?
Yeah, then they immediately become the favorite in the East to me.
Really? Over the Celtics, then?
Oh, Kawhi's that good, dude. Yeah.
I again, injury. Do we know if Kawhi is really like?
I know. We don't. No, we
that's
don't.
The thing. There's all these little like variables. We talked about in the previous question. There's always such these little variables throughout the Eastern Conference where the Pacers have the least amount of variables because their best player has an injury history, and really it doesn't. Miles Turner and Sabonis develop. That's like their only variable.
Yeah, that was a good.
And question. If they don't, they're the same team as last year with the deeper roster.
The second part of that question was: is Miles an MIP candidate? See earlier answer for that answer.
Yes. Yes.
My next pick. So little background for you guys. I always screenshot the questions after I like them on Twitter, just so I answer all of them. I'm flipping through my screenshots. And my next one is a screenshot of Alize's Instagram of him signing a contract. That's nice. snuck into the photo reel. Ryan at Colts Fan Ryan says, what is one interesting thing about you that no one on the internet knows? Also rank everyone from this list from least likely to most likely to come to Indiana next offseason. I will read about the free agents after Adam. You tell everyone something they don't know about you.
I'm a sucker for the environment. I like writing about that kind of shit. As you probably can tell now, if you follow me on Twitter, I kind of been writing about some environment stuff for a paper down here in Naples, but I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. I like hard hitting. I like the blogging and stuff like that, but I really like doing journalism and doing stuff that I feel like it's harder to find stuff for.
That's a good answer.
Give me one of yours.
I did motocross racing for 10 years growing up. I'm nice. Still into motocross racing. That's random niche sport that not a lot of people follow.
Yeah, can't say I'm in that one. I can even kind of tease you on it because I don't really know anything about it.
All right. So the screenshot of the tweet he sent me with the following players. It is which one of these guys? It says rank everyone on this list from least likely to most likely to come to Indiana. We're not going to rank them all. I'm going to pick Just pick the most likely and least likely from this list to come to Indiana next year. Do you have it? Do I need to read it?
Yes. No, I have it. So let's do this. Let's just limit the guys we know aren't coming. Let's just be honest.
Okay. Yes.
Let me pull it up real quick.
Be here. Porzingis will not be here. Done.
Kyrie won't be here. Kawhi won't be here.
Yeah, I agree. I really doubt Horford would come because of center position.
Yes. So the thing with Horford would only be is if the Celtics decide to go after Anthony Davis and the Pacers make some flip.
Yeah.
But that's probably out of the possibility too. And Klay Thompson's not coming here.
So the other four on the list. Oh, you just said Klay. The other four are Durant, Jimmy Butler, Klay Thompson, and Kemba. Highly doubt Durant's leaving. Very, 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 very small percent chance. Also highly doubt Clay's leaving. Very, very, very small percent chance. So Jimmy Butler and Kemba are probably the two I'd say are the highest percent chances, with Kemba being the highest percent.
So Kemba says he's not leaving the Hornets.
Yeah. And of course, the day that I say that is the day he just said he's not leaving. Yeah, if you haven't read it, there's an Athletic piece by Mike Scotto. Kemba's from New York, so he did an interview about New York, and Kemba said he doesn't think he'll ever end up there. He'll stay with the Hornets, so who knows?
Yeah, so we'll talk about Jimmy Butler for a minute.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler, the reason that this has gained a lot of traction, besides that he's amazing, is that he's kind of an interesting guy. He's just like a unique caricature of an NBA player, and that uniqueness, you know, makes everybody think that there's a chance he'd go to a small market team for the money. And I think that that's certainly possible because of the way he is.
Yeah, he seems not very happy in Minnesota.
I agree. Or
at least he is, and it's his attitude everywhere he is, but he seems like it's like these young guys. It doesn't seem like Andrew Wiggins. It seems like he wants to play with a team that's like kind of more ready to win a championship now. It would make sense if he wants to come to the East, where everybody's the competition is much lower, where he can make a finals pretty easily or have a better chance, where he'd be probably the best or second best player in the conference if he came over. But what I really wanted to ask you was, what do you think it would take to trade for Jimmy now and then for Butler in February?
Oh.
Because the idea, right, is if Butler's mad, then they need to trade him because they cannot afford to lose Butler and have Wiggins' contract and just be base talent and nothing else.
You know, it depends where Minnesota is in the Western Conference standings in February. And who knows how tight the West is going to be this year. But, you know, they were really good when he was healthy last year. They probably would have been closer to the 5 or 4 seed if he didn't miss 20 games.
Yeah, but it was a cluster last year. I mean, every team from 8 to 3?
They were two games out of the 3 seed, and Jimmy Butler missed 20 games. Like, I don't think it's crazy.
Yeah, but remember, we looked at the West, and every team had a major injury basically within the 3 to 8 range. Every team had some guy missed 20 games. They were so close. It all came down to like who won what game and what not. Like it was a crapshoot basically.
Yeah.
That seed. Yeah. So I don't know. You can say they could have been the 4 seed, but also they easily could have been 8 seed whether Butler was healthy or not.
I don't know who a more important injury in the West was outside of Jimmy Butler than Kawhi. I think
Gobert,
yeah. That's true. They're equal in impact. I'm with you there.
Yeah, but there's – and then Roberson got hurt. There's another – I mean,
guys only won one more game than them, you know.
And Cousins got hurt. I mean, there's five guys in the 5-2 ahead of them that all got hurt.
Hells were better without Cousins.
I know, but it's still an important guy in the regular season because it helps you depth-wise if Davis gets hurt. The West was a cluster last year.
I don't think there's a chance they trade for him just because they only did 1 year ago, and they'd like to keep him because they missed the playoffs for 12 or 13 seasons in a row. They'd like to give their fans some good team – era.
So one, I think they could be a team that could miss the playoffs. I mean, the Lakers jump up, that bumps Lakers and Denver jump up, that pushes two teams out theoretically. Yep. I don't know if Denver's better than Minnesota, but I think they could be in that range where they could a bad stretch, whatever, they end up too far out to really have a chance. And I think bringing in Butler before free agency gives you two bonuses. One, you can recruit him for an entire 3 months, which is actually an advantage, depending on Paul George. And you give him his bird rights free agency, which is going to be huge for him because he seemed pissed that he didn't get the Supermax from Chicago. He seems generally mad about that.
Yeah, that's true for sure. Yeah, exactly. The Paul George thing, I think, is going to scare a lot of teams into trading for guys now, which is super interesting. Butler turns 30 next season, or he turns 29 this coming season, so offering him a 5-year Supermax will be scary, but I think the only chance you have to trade for him would be in February if Mini's for sure out of it. But I don't see that happening.
But the only reason I see it could happen is because the Pacers have enough assets where they could give them something.
Do?
The Pacers have enough little like player assets where you could like convince yourself that, okay, we get like two starters out of this plus a first-round pick, per se.
Yeah, it'd take a lot to get Jimmy Butler.
But you say that now, but I'm not sure it's going to take that a lot. I mean, a guy who's going to be free agent in 3 months is not going to take a ton. I mean, it might take – I mean, yeah, if somebody throws a top 10 pick out there, but I'm not sure people are going to do that for Jimmy Butler. I mean, we're seeing the Kawhi market is, like, shriveled.
I'm thinking it takes – well, yeah, he might never play again. He could be awful. I'm thinking it would take like Bojan, DC, Sabonis, and a first in February.
But that's not that much to get Jimmy Butler. If you really – if Turner makes a jump, whatever, then it's like you're basically baking on a core of Oladipo, Butler, and Turner. That might win the Eastern Conference.
That's two of your best five assets and two starters. That's a lot.
So you said Bojan, DC, and Sabonis?
And what's a first.
Okay, but the first-round pick is probably going to be in the 20s.
Maybe.
So you're not getting – because you look at it as you're giving up DC, but you have Kojo to replace him. You're giving up Bojan, but you have – McDermott to replace him.
You have Jimmy Butler to replace
him. Jimmy Butler to replace him, sorry. And you look at it that you have to flip one of Sabonis Turner for something anyways, and this is a way to get that. I mean, then your cap pace gets ridiculous because you're paying 30, 25, 25 for Turner, whatever it is. But it seems like that's not that much if you think you can re-sign Butler, and that kind of makes you have this core. It's like fantastic.
I think you do that trade if it's there, but it's a lot of the core, man. It's a lot of what they have.
Yeah, but they're probably going to replace DC at the end of this next season anyways. He's going to be 31. You're going to replace Bojan probably anyways. I mean,
for sure. They'll have to.
Well, I mean, even if they don't trade, like, even if this trade doesn't happen, they're probably going to do that stuff anyways because they might go to free agency anyways. So
right.
You're just preempting the 3 months that you're going to have to get rid of these guys anyways.
I agree with
and
that.
Gives you a guy who's top 15 in the league, yeah, one of the best two-way players. I mean, a leader, all that stuff.
It'd be nice to have him. I think he is one of the top two most likely on that list to come. Or if the Warriors don't win the title, one of those two guys, but they're going to win the championship. So who cares about that?
Yeah, I don't know if any of these guys besides Butler coming for agency, though.
Yeah. All right, we got four more. Next one is fun. From Jolly Drew. I think his name's just Drew! But he always a big fan of the pod. Appreciate it. He said, Pritch has tragically fallen into a coma. Donnie Walsh calls you up and says, me and Adam are now the co-interim GMs of the Indiana Pacers. What is our first order of business? What is the long-term solution at power forward, free agency, and draft? Do you develop within, et cetera? Go. So what is your long-term solution at power forward, Adam?
I think there's a couple options. So it's Sabonis.
Mm-hmm.
It's re-sign Thad Young. Uh-huh. 4 years. That's kind of a patchwork option. Or... Well, then there's TJ Leaf, which I don't think is the option, but there's Leaf. But ultimately, I think it's going after a guy because you need a power forward who's going to be on the same talent, who can 2 or 3 years be really at least decent and competitive, the same way they did with David West a few years ago, that kind of player. And I think the guy that might go after is Aaron Gordon. I like that in a couple years.
Interesting. I would throw a lot of money to have Chris Middleton be a stretch four for them next year.
But I don't know. I don't think Middleton's available. He's going to resign. I mean, like, why would Milwaukee want to get rid of him?
They wouldn't. But, you know, maybe he doesn't want to be there anymore. Who knows?
Yeah, because I don't know. Maybe. I think
my plan would be to throw a lot of money at Chris Middleton.
I think my move would be to go after Aaron Gordon or Kevin Love in some way. Those are the two.
Kevin Love is also a good option.
Yeah, he's kind of a center, too, but he can play four. I mean him and Turner together, you can – it's a seamless 4-5.
Yes, that would be awesome. Kevin Love could also play five, which is good.
Yeah.
Trying to pull up
that's the option, right? I mean, who else? I mean, it's like
Tobias Harris next summer would be fun and good. He's just a good player.
I think you're better off signing rethinking Thad than signing Tobias.
Well, I think Tobias Harris is a lot better than Thad.
Not defensively, though.
No, but it's close. There's not a ton of great options next summer, sadly. Markieff Morris could be a cheap, good filler guy, but then he'd still be stuck looking in the future. Same with Nikola Mirotic and Jermichael Green. So I think trading or getting Middleton or something is your options, basically. It's tough.
Yeah, I don't see Middleton as an option, and so that's why I think Aaron Gordon might be there, because I think the way they did his contract, it's kind of primed for trading in two seasons.
They did their contract so they could have more cap space throughout the life of the deal.
It's also primed to be traded if they determine Bamba and Isaac can play together and they don't need him.
Because it makes trade your best player.
Well, what I'm saying is Bamba and Isaac turn into their best two players and they decide that we don't need Gordon anymore.
The hypothetical scenario where Aaron Gordon is worse than Jonathan Isaac, then yes, they would probably trade him.
I mean,
and his value would be worse.
Well, no. What if you just decide Isaac and Bahamut are going to be our future and we get a decent offer. Like you get, I don't know.
You're the 21 have mil and you're worse than a second year power forward. Yeah, you are not worth a lot.
What if Isaac becomes really, really good? I don't know.
Yeah, I love Johnny Isaac, but I don't think that that timeline would ever line up.
I mean, I'm thinking, I guess, in two seasons from now.
Ah, that's certainly
possible. So I'm thinking like 2020, 2021.
They'd have a ton of money then. No more Biombo. They're free. Or no, they traded Biombo. That's crazy, by the way. No more Mozgov.
No, but they would just trade him because they don't need another power forward.
Maybe.
Or they don't need a power forward who's off the bench making $21 million a year, or at that point it's 18.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe.
And you could Patrick with Thad for one extra year.
Yeah. You
bring Thad back on a 1 year deal. Then it could work. Just saying.
Yeah. I'm pretty low on Aaron Gordon, and that's a lot of money for Aaron Gordon.
So. I'm not low on him. I think he would fit really well at Victor Oladipo.
Yeah, a lot of people do. I don't get it. Let's move on. That's a hard freaks. Answer. That's a hard answer. You could also pray you hit on a draft pick. That's certainly an option.
Yeah.
My actual first answer is try Sabonis, see if it works.
Yeah, no, that's the move, the Sabonis. If most can play power forward, they've got this core set.
Yes. Dom hit him up, whose name is currently Wom, but it just changed from Dom. Do you think McMillan will give Holiday and or Alize good minutes? No, I do not.
Nope. We already answered that.
I think they combine for probably 400 to 500 minutes this year, and Holiday has about 350 of those.
Yeah,
I'll surprise you with that last question. So we have two more. I feel like we're going to get some submissions after we record. I feel bad about that. I will respond to you if that is the case on Twitter.
Yes.
This one is from Shiki31 at Reed Shikuma. Says, can Kylo Quinn play the four spot? If so, would he be a good fit with Turner or Domas in the lineup? I think he can play the four because he can pass a little bit. But I think he'd be a horrible fit with Domas and an okay fit with Turner.
Yeah, I mean, O'Quinn and Domas is that double plot alignment lineup that Caitlin Cooper nicknamed. That's just gross.
I'm terrified of it.
I mean, maybe Sabonis can shoot the three. Maybe Sabonis comes like this, like 35% three-point shooter, and it's fine. Then it works.
Yeah, well, Quinn can't shoot at all. So the fear for those of you that haven't read Kalen's thing or just can't picture this is like Sabonis' best skills are pick and roll, right? So him diving towards the basket is where he's the best. So if you have Kylo Quinn just hanging out with a defender down there, that ruins that entire asset of Sabonis' skill, and it might be his best one. So that would be a disaster of a plan.
Say O'Quinn's going to sit on the bench and going to get a lot of practice reps and going to spend a lot of time hoping nobody gets hurt.
Yes, he is.
That's his job. His job isn't
very good at it.
I really hope. I mean, he might get some in some weird lineups where like the other team is playing kind of two bigs too. He might play just off the bench if they. But that's it. I mean, they're not going to be like we're going to intentionally play O'Quinn and Sabonis together. Hopefully not.
Yeah. So, Adam, our last question is from a surprise guest. Do you know who it is?
From Marina, right?
It's from Marina. Did she tell you what they are?
No, but I'm sure there's like nine of them, and I'm sure they're.
She says she asks these, and you should have answers.
Okay.
One, if you could coach / whatever your basketball passions are, any team besides the Pacers, who would it be and why?
It would. I can't give a school, but it would be like some like mid-major D1 school. Because if we get the real opportunity, because now with college basketball, I mean, the guys are all the top schools are all one and done. And that's not like a bad thing because they honestly should be able to go when they're out of high school because they honestly should. But with these mid-majors, you can like kind of like build a program and really get time to coach and develop player versus like one and done. You're sort of bringing guys to hope that you can hit the big season and move on kind of thing.
That'd be cool. That'd be fun.
Butler was 5 years ago.
I think it'd be cool to be one of the worst teams in a big conference where guys don't go to be one and done, like Minnesota. You know, you're still in school, but you don't get the stars that leave in 1 year.
Or what about like Northwestern?
Yes. Yes. Northwestern.
Or like maybe you go to a school that's been so plagued. Just like they were like trying to have a good school with like historically great. And then just complete. Like there's a school.
SMU?
No, SMU's UNLV. Football. I'm thinking, didn't Russell play at like University of San Francisco or something like that?
I don't know where he went.
I think Bill Russell played there. I don't remember. But they were like you'd be at a school like on another option to be at a school that's on like a beach to like UC Santa Barbara.
Like all close, yeah.
Yeah.
My answer is the Wizards because I liked the Wizards as a kid.
That's fair. Also, I was ready. Went to University of San Francisco.
Very nice. I did not know that. That's a cool tidbit.
It's probably from a Bill Simmons podcast. I learned it because he talks about Russell all the goddamn time.
Two. Oh, there's more questions. There's.
I know. I would say the Wizards are kind of a good choice if you want bad locker room and stuff.
Let's go,
players.
I like fun and drama. Two.
Yo,
Who is your favorite non-All-Star or underrated player of all time?
Non-All-Star underrated player? Ooh.
You go first. Ooh, mine is Anton Jameson. He was my first ever favorite player, actually. He was on the Wizards. He's a two-time All-Star, so that might be unfair.
It's not like he's like a perennial All-Star. I'll give you the pass.
He was really good a couple years in Washington, 20 points a game. But like, he's a 20,000-point career scorer. He was pretty dang good. But right when I got into basketball, it was like NBA Live 2004. And he was, you know, that was one of his All-Star years on the Wizards. He had Gilbert Arenas and Brendan Haywood on that team. They were fun. I truly liked Anton Jameson, so I pick him.
All right, so this is going to go to the Pacer fans out there who actually – this is the proof that I've been a Pacer fan for a long time. Fred Jones.
That's a good one.
So he was key part of that team that basically – in 04-05, when everybody got suspended because our test went in the stands, he was like a key part of that team being on the bench. And he was just like, I remember for a guy who I think he was like maybe 6 feet tall, maybe he was under. So he looks at a 6'4", but he definitely is not that tall.
No.
But I remember one time going to a game in that range and he got a jump ball against some 6'10 guy and he beat him for the jump ball. I'm thinking, this guy could jump out of the gym, it seemed like at times. I mean, yeah. He was just a really good athlete for a guy who was so small. And he played for the team for a couple of years. I think he had a pretty good playoff run for them in 05-06 or 04-05 when they played the Nets that year. Might have had a 40-point game even in the playoffs one time, but he was sort of like an underrated guy for the Pacers who was just kind of good for a little while.
If I had to pick a Pacers answer, I'm picking Brandon Rush.
Why? His college career?
No, that second season when he started a bunch and shot absurdly good from three and he was like actually helpful for the offense because he could shoot so well.
I think I just blanked out those years.
2011 was pretty gross.
Yeah.
I don't know. Brandon Rush was cool, man.
I mean, I remember Danny Granger, but besides that, those teams were
yuck.
Yeah. So another throwback guy just to talk about, Anthony Johnson. You know, that was.
I don't know that.
Pacer player who scored 40 points in a playoff game one time.
That's cool.
I remember going to that game. That's another guy. I couldn't remember if Fred Jones or Anthony Johnson were the ones who scored a ton of points that playoff game.
You know why Brandon Rush was so important? Because he stretched the floor at a time when Troy Murphy was a four.
Oh, God. I'm going to look at Brandon Rush stats real quick.
Watson was the starting point guard.
So Rush was brought in as part of like the Roy Hibbert trade, right, back in the day? I think he was.
No, they were on the team at the same time together.
No, not when Roy Hibbert was traded.
Oh, yes.
They traded Roy Hibbert on draft night, and he was one of the players involved in it. Yes. That's what I meant. Sorry. So one year he played all 82 games for the Pacers and averaged about 9 points. What you're talking about, the 09-10 team.
Yeah, we could shoot really good. That team starting lineup was either T.J. Ford or Earl Watson, and then Danny Granger, Brandon Rush, Troy Murphy, Roy Hibbert. Hilarious.
So this is crazy. From 09 to 2012, over those three seasons, Rush shot 41, 42, and 45% from three on 3.5.
Told you, dude. Underrated Pacers, Brandon Rush.
I mean, what? I mean, then he just kind of fell out.
One trick pony. Complete one trick pony, but that's who he is.
Damn, yeah, but I mean, now
he won a championship in Golden State. Deserves it.
I'm saying nowadays, if he put up those stats in a 4-year run, he would have got the Doug McDermott contract, if not more. I mean, put it 45% from three, you guaranteed money in this league.
How many attempts is that on that season?
He shot 45, 3.4 a game.
219 threes. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad.
That's not funny. Bad. That's a good answer. There's a final question to this, but I closed my phone on accident. Oh, if you could have any co-host in the whole world for a podcast, who would it be? Not a guest, a permanent co-host.
Tony East.
Wow. Besides me.
Oh, I don't know. I don't.
I have an answer, and I think we share an answer here, dude.
Okay, say it.
Ryan Russillo, so we can have the God voice on the other line.
Oh, you mean like, oh, okay, if we're going that, I was thinking God you actually could get.
Oh, no, I'm talking to anybody.
Oh, yeah, Ryan Russillo. He's the best. He's the funniest NBA guy who's, like, the most non-serious but serious about NBA, like, stuff talk.
Oh, I would – no, it'd be so awkward to pick a realistic one. No, we're not going to do that.
No, I know. I did want to say that podcast you did with Derek was pretty good.
Yeah, Derek was great. And someone tweeted at me and said, I hope he's a regular on the show this year. So me and you will have to talk about that on our own at some point.
Well, if he wants to be on a few times or what – I don't get in the way. Getting away of content, we always.
I like to support the independent blog. Good for him, man.
Yeah. Also, we could use point. I mean, content is always good. There's nothing wrong with having too much content.
My God, we're gonna be dry. I get that is the end of the questions. Thank you all for submitting them. And we're going to talk about this again later in the week, but be prepared for one episode a week starting next week.
Yeah, I think that's what we're going to do. We'll cut back. Like I said, this time of year is getting hard. They don't. What you said, that first preseason game is in October?
I just thought, yeah, they don't play basketball for 2.5 months. But I decided it was time to cut down to one episode a day when Exhibit 10 guys are getting signed.
Yeah, when the biggest Pacer news of like the past week is that Elijah Stewart signed
a deal. Yeah, exactly. And like when you're doing one episode a week, that's really huge because it's something for us to talk about. So yeah, it's come to that time for us.
Yeah, I think we've got some good ideas. We do. Probably like rotations. McMillan might sign a contract extension at some point this summer. Yeah. Or so much that to talk about. And I don't know, we'll come up with some other ideas. Hopefully it won't be too boring.
So our last two episode a week will be this week. We'll have one later this week. We don't know what day yet, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, and we had noticed there's been a spike in our listeners, so that's awesome. Whoever out there is new listeners to this podcast. I know it might be just because we're less per week, so now people are like, this time of year, I'm the same way. It comes July, like, I want NBA content because I'm like, I don't want to listen to baseball. I get into football reluctantly at some point, but you know, this time of year is great for NBA stuff, and so it's so limited right now because every major NBA person, national wise at least, takes time off or whatever. So we'll try to keep doing one a week just to keep the content game going.
Yeah. You are writing your rotation stuff still?
Yep. I got one coming out maybe tonight or tomorrow. Probably tomorrow.
Cool. I will write about Elijah Stewart, I guess, after this, and then we'll see what happens.
All right. Right about, let's see how many words you can get. I'm guessing somewhere between 250 and 300.
I bet it's a little over 300.
Oh, you've already written it.
Yes, I have. Woohoo.
All right.
That's all I got if you're done, too.
That's all. I'm good. You guys all know our Twitters because you've been saying us questions. So
yeah, really appreciate the questions, guys. Makes love these episodes. They're super fun.
Yeah, we'd like to know what you guys are thinking out there. So just keep sending questions, and we'll either answer them with our Twitter feeds or we'll answer them on the podcast.
Yes. Thank you guys for listening to this episode of Locked On Pacers. I would like to close and say stop comparing Alize Johnson to Draymond Green. Thank you, and have a great rest of your week.